will be done by 2:30?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah. So I'm going to open this committee, the Senate Interim Committee on General Government Accountability, for January 10th. And we have a couple of things on the agenda. First, we'll do a work session, the introduction of committee legislative concepts. Would you read whatever we've got to explain what we're going to do?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the continuing members will recall the conversation during November legislative days about what was likely to be introduced in this committee. LC 208 and LC 225 are the concepts that were delivered. LC 208 is the one that is a redraft of Senate Bill 1038 from 2017. It was submitted at the request of former Senator Starr, who is present today if there are any questions. It would add a civics test component to the existing requirements that must be met in order for a person to receive a high school diploma. And LC 225 is the concept that would create a process for periodic review of boards and commissions. You'll also recall that there was a third concept, but there was some miscommunication, and that it was redrafted also. Senate Bill 10, the transit bill, was redrafted in the Business and Transportation Committee and will be introduced there. So that's why we don't have a third on our agenda. Also, LC 208 is at the dais because I didn't discover until about 30 minutes ago, 40 minutes ago, that we failed to post it to OLIS. But it is a duplicate, a redraft of a previous bill, so I hope that didn't cause anybody any confusion. So we just brought it and put it at the dais just in case, because it was so close in time.
So I am going to open the work session on introduction of committee legislative concepts LC 208 and LC 225. And I'm going to move that those concepts be introduced as committee bills. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And I'm going to close that work session and open an informational meeting. This is on improving government legislation, and we have a couple of folks from the governor's office and from state procurement. And if you would join us, introduce yourself for the record.
Well, good afternoon. Thanks for having us here today. For the record, my name is Barry Leslie, and I'm the governor's deputy chief of staff. And with me today is Debbie Dennis, who is the Department of Administrative Services statewide procurement manager. And so we're here to talk about one of the governor's 2018 pieces of legislation, and this is about improving government in procurement. And I want to just kind of start our presentation by telling you that we had thought about waiting until February to come and talk to you, but this is a pretty complicated piece of legislation because it involves procurement across the state. And so we thought it would probably be more helpful to get some of your earlier questions, and then we can go back and really think those through in January and come back and have any significant questions that you have answered by February. So we have the nuts and bolts of the presentation today, and I think most of the specifics, but if there are things, we're really here to get anything that you're thinking about that we haven't thought about answered and addressed before February, because it's such a short period of time to work on bills. So with that, we'll dive in, and we're gonna kind of go back and forth explaining the concept. Mm-hmm. So this bill really has three primary parts. And the way I've been explaining this to people is, imagine you're chief executive officer of an organization, and your organization has 80 divisions across the organization. And you know, and you've been, or you kind of been able to piece together, that the organization spends about $8 billion every 2 years on buying stuff. But you don't actually have any real insights into which vendors they're using, the amount they're spending on specific products, and really any kind of data on how that spend is occurring across those 80 divisions. That's the challenge that we face in state government, is that we know that we spend this $8 billion on procurement over a biennium, but we don't have any kind of shared system across state agencies to actually capture and track and leverage that spend. The good news is that, and this addresses the first part of this legislation, is that back in 2015, a group of state procurement professionals got together and said, this is kind of crazy. Like, we spend so much time and money procuring things for the state, and we're a valuable resource, but we're not able to actually do it in a way that manages workload. There's very little automation, very little consistency across agencies, and we aren't able to really communicate from agency to agency about how we're purchasing stuff. And so how can we solve this part of the procurement problem? So they began a pilot in 2015, working together to think about what an IT solution would look like to use across all of state government. And they did the heavy lifting of not only finding a vendor who's well thought of nationally, but also working with the Chief Information Officer's office to receive conditional stage gate 3 approval for the system that they have selected. And then I think even the harder part, as we all know from working in collaboration with partners and stakeholders and other people, is they actually came to consensus among these 9 disparate state agencies about what the system would look like, who to use, and how to move together in a project management fashion. So the first part of this legislation really takes that model and actually requires it to be used as an enterprise approach from the original pilot that was started in 2015. And I'll turn it over to Debbie to talk about what the e-procurement system would do.
For the record, my name is Debbie Dennis, and I'm the Chief Procurement Officer at the State of Oregon DAS Administrative Services. So the first thing we wanted to do was talk a little bit about what e-procurement means. It's a term that can be used pretty loosely, and it means a lot of different things to a lot of different individuals. So for us, we have a system today, but it only provides a fraction of the functionality that we really need to be able to understand, see, and leverage our spend. The system we have today is ORPIN. The functionality of ORPIN is to really notify the vendors of what bidding opportunities the state has, and then to notify the vendors again of which bid or proposal was selected. So what this e-procurement system would do is it's more of a procure-to-pay solution. So there's 5 primary components. The first thing is that it automates a tremendous number of processes that are done manually today. And the types of processes are when you need to request a procurement. Today, we're filling out paper forms and routing those around for signatures, and then eventually it goes to the procurement office. So this is an automated way to see what state agency employees are requesting, making sure the approvals are coded into the system and that all purchases are getting appropriate approvals. And then it routes it over to the procurement office to do the sourcing. Receiving is done within the system. Invoices can be submitted back up into the system and then paid through the system. So we're not only able to see what's been requested, we're able to see what's been ordered, what's been received, and what's actually been paid for. And that's a piece that we don't have today. The other things that the system would do is it establishes online catalogs. So we have over 300 statewide price agreements today. And when agencies want to use those, they kind of dig through a PDF file and see what products and services are available. So this system would automate what's available on a statewide price agreement. It would be similar, not just like, but kind of similar to an Amazon shopping experience where they could type in pencils and that would bring up the price agreement vendor who sells pencils. They could pick the one that they want, drag it into their shopping cart, and then it gets routed for approval. The next thing that it does is it provides some self-service functionality to vendors. So they're able to create their account, let the state know what kinds of goods and services they sell, and then they can also look and see what other vendors currently have contracts with the state for those goods or services and what prices they're charging. And so this is a piece of functionality that the vendors don't have today. And the last piece that it would do is it would automate our RFP process. So today we're able to publicly and online post that we have an RFP available, and the vendors can download a PDF of that document and read through it. But when they want to respond to us, they carry boxes of paper, or now flash drives, into the front desk, and it gets stamped that it arrived on time. And so that's a very manual process. We then make copies, we give them to state employees who read everything. So all of those processes would also be automated throughout the system. So vendors, small businesses could be at home, after hours, and they could upload their bids right into the system. And then we could route those to the evaluators within the system. The biggest thing that it brings to us is spend data and the ability to analyze that data. The next thing that we wanted to talk about, this is part of a cost containment strategy. And so one question that we know will be asked is, well, how much will you save? What will happen? What great things will happen in the state if you get this system? It's a really hard question for us to answer, and primarily because we don't know exactly what we're spending today. And so it's hard to estimate what we could save if we don't know what we're buying, when we're buying it. I do know, I did a little informal survey this past week, and I learned from the purchasing managers across the state that they're cutting about 50,000 purchase orders a year. Those are housed in notebooks, on drives within each agency, but there's no central visibility to what is occurring on those purchase orders. So my office, as a central office, doesn't have the ability to look for common purchases across the organization. One of the biggest cost savings drivers is the ability to implement a spend management program. If we had the ability to see what agencies were buying and when they were buying it, we could then negotiate better terms and conditions, put together group buys. There's a lot of activity that we could do if we had the data. The system doesn't do those things for us, so this is a two-part solution. If we had a system, then we would have to change our buying behaviors and our strategy in order to be able to better leverage the spend that the state has. The other cost-saving contributor that we're able to talk about at this point is the efficiency of automating all these processes. The vendor has told us that other states have realized about a 25% efficiency savings by automating all of these processes. And so we think that in terms of consistency and in terms of better efficient use of our staff, we would see similar results that the other states have seen.
So in terms— Any questions so far? Yes. Senator Lincoln.
As you described the scenario, it makes sense, right? And I have a couple of things pop into my brain as you're describing the workflow process and authorizations, mm-hmm. and whatever. In your example, you use, you know, for example, a pencil. Well, everybody on staff in every agency, is going to need to buy this. What level of authority do you imagine allocating for purchasing? Does it still come only out of the purchasing departments of those organizations? Do each of those agencies have a centralized purchasing authority, and those are the authorized individuals who are part of the workflow? Then how that agency distributes those widgets around their office is their own business, and you're not involved in that. It's not really the Amazon equivalent. It's still a purchasing organization.
Mm-hmm. So thank you for the question. There's sort of two parts to that. So there could be workflows built in. So each agency could make some decisions about how they wanted to implement approvals. So we currently have, with our statewide price agreements, most of those are mandatory. So agencies today are typically not able to go buy, for example, office supplies anywhere they want. We have a couple of dedicated contracts for those. As far as And so we wouldn't see that changing. What would possibly change is the ease to access commonly used items and items that are consumable within the agency up to certain levels. Those types of things can be set within the system. The other side of that is deciding how much or what kind is a Ticonderoga pencil better than the Office Max brand pencil. Those are decisions that the system wouldn't necessarily take care of for us, but business decisions that the state would have to make if we were going to require generic office supplies or limit, you know, the quantity of office supplies that would be ordered.
A follow-up on a different vein with regard to one of the other items that you mentioned was bulk buying opportunities and whatever. Are you thinking across agencies? My agency A buys a half a case and agency B and C want, it's like we're talking about cows here. Mm-hmm. Somebody else wants a quarter and somebody else wants a quarter instead of a half. Are you imagining that this system could accommodate that bulk purchase of a single unit, you know, that gets carved up internally? And then have you accounted for storaging, warehousing, distributing it within that automated environment?
Sure. So the system would give us the information and the data to be able to make those kinds of decisions. We would be able to look back over history and see, oh, it looks like Agency A orders, you know, cows this many times a year and at this quantity. And so in the central office, we would be able to analyze that data and make sourcing decisions based on that. The other piece of what I talked about earlier is the system doesn't do everything. So behaviors and approaches to how we source and how we buy would also have to change. And so agencies would need to be willing to cooperate and to pool their buys together. And at DAS, for those under DAS authority, we have some ability to compel that type of behavior. But yes, that is the vision, is that we would be able to look across the enterprise, see what's being purchased, and pool it together and commit to solid buys to get deeper discounts. We have not talked about purchasing in bulk and storing it. I don't know that that would be a path that we would go down. It's certainly not something we've talked about yet.
On the other hand, there are things that you could do enterprise-wide, like licensing.
Yes.
Which doesn't require storage. And we do have licensing of the same product in many, many places currently that this system would allow you to track and combine in one license.
That's right.
So, did you have a question?
Well, I do have a question and more of a comment too, I guess. But you have a hard job, Debbie, with all of these regulations, and I think the main reason for these regulations is to prevent sweetheart deals and all of those things. The brother-in-law, the city council person gets the project, and we have to do those. On the other hand, when I, in my other job, look at RFPs from the state or from other, you know, Portland or the Water Bureau comes to mind, they have become these beasts that nobody wants to deal with. Mm-hmm. They're so unfriendly that our policy is like, you know, we just don't have time, we're not going to do it, which means, and I know others in my field feel the same way, they're just not worth the time. Mm-hmm. And so that means you're going to get a vendor who's maybe not as good and can't. You're going to get somebody who's got the time and the patience to do this and has the people around, or maybe doesn't have the business or small or whatever. And so I'm hoping that this effort is also something that adds a little bit more real-world user-friendliness to it. Because mm-hmm. when we do RFPs for a bank or somebody else that's not bound by these regulations, it goes really smooth. Mm-hmm. It's not that we get the job, or most times we don't, but it's a very straightforward process. The questions are, okay, they're very relevant, and mm-hmm. I know you know, the price and experience, those kinds of things show up, and either we get it or we don't. But with these RFPs and the length and it's sort of, I'll say, inane questions, not necessarily from the state, but other agencies, in an effort to protect, you know, assets and all that, it just is almost impossible. So I'm hoping that there's a little bit of real-world user-friendliness that can be somehow incorporated into the RFP process.
Thank you, Senator Haas. I appreciate that comment, and I agree that our processes can be very overwhelming and bureaucratic in nature. There are some things that we have to include. What we find a lot of times is that different requirements are passed, and we want to make sure that the state is doing business with vendors who meet a certain standard of responsibility. And so we have a lot of check boxes and requirements in our processes that are exactly what you said, that are set up to protect the state's interest. We will continue to look for ways to be more friendly and more understandable and business forward in the future.
Thanks. Appreciate that.
And you'll bring those things to us that we can actually help you with. Is that right?
I will certainly do that.
Any other questions? Did you have more?
Oh, Senator Riley, we do. Chair Riley, if that's all right. Just a few more quick things on the e-procurement system. There's a couple more pieces of this legislation, so we'll move through them quickly. So Debbie has done a great job of talking about how this automates processes, improves data capture, provides for more accurate reporting of what we're purchasing, and also has, in other states and jurisdictions that have used this, we've seen increased vendor participation. And I think, to Senator Hass's point, because this does streamline the experience that vendors have with the system, it's oftentimes easier for small and local businesses to use the system than some of our processes now, as a result of just kind of that ease of use and customer service that Debbie mentioned earlier. We also understand that through the pricing model that Debbie's going to touch on, that this actually has a great outcome for cities, counties, education, school districts, and other local government, because if we do follow, again, this pricing model, this would be an opportunity for cities and counties and others to actually use this system. So not only could they have access to the price agreements, but also employ the system in their own jurisdiction so that they would also have this e-procurement solution to use as well. So cost and funding.
Okay, sure. So one of the things we wanted to be sure we talked to you about is the vendor has proposed to us what we would consider to be a non-traditional funding model. And we want to get all the state's best thinking around this model before we go too much further. And so that's one of the things we wanted to chat with you guys about today. This particular funding model would require very little investment by the state up front. We would have to hire our own independent QA. And my office would need 2 to 3 staff members, primarily limited duration, just through the stand-up of the project. All of the other costs of the project would be borne by the vendor. In order to recoup their investment, they would be we would be working with our current price agreement vendors, not all vendors that the state does business with, but those that hold statewide price agreements. And those vendors would be charged a 1% fee on any sale that they made through the system. And then that fee would primarily, there would be a revenue share between the e-procurement vendor and the state, but there would be a cost model that would be negotiated and documented so that as the investment in their initial investment was recouped, then the state would sort of level that off and the revenue share would decrease over time. There's some significant benefits to the state and to local government to go with this model, but we also understand that there's risk because we've not done something like this before, and we would have to be very careful about how we negotiated such an agreement. Some of the benefits, the primary benefits, are what Barry already mentioned, and that is if we go with a traditional funding model, the license to use the system is for state agencies. If we go for this particular funding model, any local government in the state of Oregon could choose to implement the full end-to-end solution at no out-of-pocket cost to them, except for any integrations or if they had to integrate into a unique financial system or something like that, that would be an out-of-pocket cost. The expense of implementing in these local governments would also be borne by the vendor and recouped over time through this 1% fee. The 1% fee is negotiable, the amount of the revenue share is negotiable, the amount of time is negotiable, so we have a lot of levers that we have to consider. The other huge benefit to the central office is that the vendor would provide a significant level of service to the state. So they would do all of the vendor support, so help desk, phone calls and things like that, helping our vendors understand how to navigate the system. They would do a significant amount of catalog enablement, and that's a kind of a fancy term, but it's basically uploading all those statewide price agreements and getting them in a format that they could be pushed into a shopping cart. They would do outreach to all of the local governments that were interested in the system. And there was one more thing. Oh, they would also provide that strategic sourcing consultation and training to the state. So that piece about changing the way that we do our business, changing the way that we conduct our procurements, they would provide a level of consulting to us and help us analyze that spend, because it's not something we've had the opportunity to do before. So we wanted to make sure that we mentioned that to you guys today, and we want to get some initial feedback and your best thoughts on what things we should be considering. Is this a model that you would even think would be viable?
Yes, Senator Mann.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of questions. I see there's a reference I read up on this. Is a product called Periscope.
Yes.
Is this a U.S. product? What other similar products that are out there, have those gone through the same scrutiny? And the reason why I ask is that we have been, in one of my other subcommittees, we have been dealing with Department of Revenue and DAS, and they're doing other types of computer software imaging and programming and stuff that seem to not meet the end results, and they're coming back saying that we have a change in venue, and then we need another $1 million for this, and now we need to add more people to this, or we need to distract more people. So moving forward, I would be really, you know, would like to know is that, are there other products that are out there? Are there U.S.-made products, or are there foreign-made products? And I understand from reading the material that, you know, it can be implemented in other areas. Right now, only 7 states are using this. Mm-hmm. What other states are using this, and what are some of the feedback that you're getting from, you know, glitches in there, and how is the vendor one that's going to be long-term, or, you know, 7 states doesn't really impress me a lot, mm-hmm. you know, so.
Those are really great questions. I have phone meetings set up with most of the CPOs in those 7 states to gather their feedback. The first one I'll be talking to this Friday. We did do a full-blown RFP. The pilot group that she talked about, the 9 agencies that got together, they did conduct a full RFP. I think they had 7 or 8 responses. They vetted the functionality of the system and the references pretty well as they made the selection. This is a vendor that is known for being, you know, in the top of those that provide a government focused e-procurement solution. There are other e-procurement solutions, but they're kind of for like manufacturing environments and other types of environments. And what we've bumped into in the past is there might be a great solution, but it doesn't work well for some of the requirements that we have. I will find out a little bit more. I have a table back at my office, and so I can find out what the other states are using. Like you said, 7 isn't that many when you're considering 50. What I know is a lot of states are using the procurement module off of their ERP. And so a lot of times procurement doesn't get to select a solution because the state has an ERP, and so they use the procurement module that's available there.
Chair Whitaker.
Either of you can jump in here. Barry, I think as you were describing, you said something like 80 agencies, and then you had some dollar figure. What was it?
$8 billion.
$8 billion. So 80 agencies, $8 billion in a biennium. Mm-hmm. So that's $4 billion on an annual basis. You know, just round numbers. And then I thought I heard Debbie offer that this was in 300 purchase agreements or price agreements, mm-hmm. versus purchase agreements. There's 50,000 purchase agreements, but 300 price agreements. And I'm wondering what the makeup, how does that splatter out? Is that $8 billion, $4 billion number across those 300 or across the 50,000 purchase agreements that are all over the map in Amazon.com kind of talk? or are those really associated with the 300 price agreements that you're referring to?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. Do you want me to take it?
Please,
okay.
Yes.
Okay. So the price agreement portfolio, the spend under our price agreement portfolio is about $450 million a year, or close to $1 billion a biennium.
Okay.
So that's today, that's a fraction of
right.
the total spend. This was later in our presentation, but I'll bring it up right now, that one of the benefits or the cost drivers that other states see when they implement a solution like this is that more of the purchasing is driven to those statewide price agreements where the terms are negotiated and the bulk buys are negotiated, and there are fewer of the one-off procurements. The other $7 billion is large contracts, little purchase orders, spots card purchases. It's sort of all over the map.
That volume that's outside is bigger than the volume that you're addressing, which is really interesting in terms of how this procurement system works with the 1%. The 1%'s really on the $1 billion side of the fence.
That's right.
What about the other $7 billion? And where's there's an awful lot of effort in getting those guys online and, you know, caged, if you will, to bring them into the system and all of those various companies and vendors and all of their negotiated prices across agencies, and at the county and municipal level, it just, you know, blossoms. It's an exponential problem, and yet Periscope is somehow, you know, put some grasp on this to say 1% is fine. What's 1% of $8 billion? Come on, Mark, you know.
I think it's 800 million.
Yeah. It's a big, big number.
It's a big number.
It's ginormous,
right?
To use the modern lingo.
Yes. We wouldn't ever see all of that spend coming under price agreement, but we would hope to see quite a bit more spend coming under price agreement.
So, why don't you go ahead now with the rest of your presentation?
Two other just small parts, and now we're kind of switching gears a little bit to two other aspects of the legislation that are separate and apart from the e-procurement solution. But these are also efforts to save money in procurement and to give procurement professionals in state government more tools to be able to save money. And so the first one that we'd actually like your permission to pilot is something called a reverse auction concept. Not sure if you've ever heard about this before. This is something that's being used in lots of other states and jurisdictions and in counties and cities in Oregon. This is essentially a time when a state agency would say, we're going to go buy 100 computers. They all need to be by the same brand and same specifications. And so we're going to have a group of qualified bidders come forward, and we're going to qualify them first and make sure that they actually meet all of our procurement standards. And then we're going to run what's called a reverse auction. So for some specified period of time, like an hour or 90 minutes, all of those qualified bidders will then bid on the opportunity to sell the state 100 computers or, you know, any type of product that we're purchasing. What we've seen in other jurisdictions is using that tool can often save about 30% of what you paid in a previous transaction. It's not an appropriate tool for every transaction. It's most useful when you're spending $150,000 or more and when you're buying a lot of one type of thing. And so this pilot essentially gives state agencies the permission in working with Debbie's office to try out this tool and actually see if we can demonstrate that it's another tool that could potentially save money and really, you know, demonstrate to Oregonians that price really matters when you're doing business with the state. So that's the second part, and I'll turn it over to Debbie for the last part.
Sure. So the third part that is in this legislative concept is putting more emphasis on price when we conduct our evaluations. So what we know is that the Oregon Procurement Code gives us a lot of flexibility, and that's really important. It's really important to be able to select the right vendor for the right job, and that's not always the lowest priced vendor. And so we have a lot of ability and authority within our procurement code to conduct RFPs and to set criteria in advance about what's important. Is experience important? Is their approach to the project important? important? Are the requirements important? Warranties and cost. What we're finding, especially recently, is that cost is becoming a smaller portion of the allocated points when we evaluate RFPs. So we did a little bit of analysis, and it looks like currently when the state conducts RFPs, the cost is weighted between 0 and 20%. More specifically, the exact average was 17%. And so what we'd like to do is pilot putting a floor on what agencies can set their cost weighting at when they conduct an RFP. And so for this pilot, we would set that floor at 30%. And so anytime an agency was conducting a formal RFP, the final evaluation criteria would require that 30% of that decision be made on the cost. There would be a couple of other sort of exemptions. For example, if a procurement really didn't, if there was anticipated to be a really negative outcome, the agency head could exempt that particular procurement from this requirement and just make a report into DAS so we could keep track of how many were exempted from the process. The other piece is that we could run some preliminary screening to make sure that once we get down to doing that final evaluation, all the vendors that are left in the pool can actually perform the work and do good work. And then at that point, when we make our final evaluation, the cost would be at least 30% of the evaluation.
And that's the whole package.
Are there questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll be back with you in February.
Sounds good. Thank you very much for the presentation.
Thank you.
And with that, I think that's everything. Anything for the good of the order?
Mr. Chair, I do want to apologize again for my tardiness. My meeting went over, and then I just realized that when I came in, I stood up there and I signed a document while you were sitting there waiting at the table. So I humbly apologize for that. That never should have happened, and I won't make a mistake like that again.
Well, I'll accept your apology this time, sir.
Just this one.
Just this one. So with that, I'm going to close the committee meeting. Thank you very much.